Hello, how are you, Miranda?
I'm good, how are you?
I'm pretty good. But we should say hello. We have a special guest today. We have one more person.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Introduce yourself.
Hi, my name's Bridget.
Yeah, we have Bridget, and we're so excited to have a conversation about Canada and different communities in Canada. But before we get going, we have to do our obvious questions. So, Helen, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a Pinot Noir tonight. What about you?
I am drinking an Italian red, and I'll be honest, I don't remember where it's from. But it is quite good. Bridget, what are you?
Fair enough.
A nice big glass of iced tea.
Because she drove, and we're responsible.
Yes, absolutely.
Very good.
So I'm really excited to start talking. The reason we wanted to have Bridget on is not only because she's a dear friend of mine, but because she herself is one of the most truly bilingual people I've ever met. And so we just wanted to have a real from childhood bilingual speaker talk about their experience. We've talked about this a lot, but you actually grew up in a really small town for the first 10 years of your life?
Yeah, I lived in Chapleau. Mm-hmm. It was pretty much half and half English and French. So I was raised by Francophone parents. So we only spoke French for the first maybe 6 years of my life.
Wow.
In the house. But my environment was Anglophone. So radio, TV, kids, everything was Anglophone. So yes, I went to a French school, but I was surrounded by English. Yeah, I spoke French at home, but I grasped English as quickly.
Yeah.
So
that's so interesting because I know for us, we grew up incredibly Anglophone, right? Like,
yeah.
No one else in my family speaks French, and I know no one else in Helen's family really speaks French. Is that right?
Yeah, they just do, you know, high school level French, so they can do a few sentences here and there.
They can order food in Paris, but other than that...
Yeah, other than that,
we can get by.
They get lost very quickly with the French man.
Yeah.
His accent's a bit too quick.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing that one of the reasons we wanted to have you on is because you're from Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the misconceptions that we have about French in Canada is that it's entirely within the borders of Quebec.
Mm-mm. Nope.
No.
And that's one thing we hate as Ontarians. Well, Franco-Ontarien.
Yeah.
Well, it's because we have an identity,
yeah.
Right? We want to be known not as Quebecers because we've never lived in Quebec.
Of course.
Right? So there are many small French communities spread out all over Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You can have more than one French community around the same big city.
Interesting.
So, yeah. And, it's really crazy because a lot of people don't even know we exist. Like, there's immigrants coming to Canada, and I speak to them in French, and they're like, do you live in Gatineau, or do you live in Quebec? And I'm like, no. Are you born in Quebec? No. And there's just no other way to explain it, right? Like, some people, you know, moved from Quebec, you know, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, and they settled in Ontario, probably for crops and other things.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed in their little communities. And then they stayed further away from the city because the city is where all the English, you know, congregated.
Yeah.
So English, and then you have the immigrants that go to the bigger cities, right? Because you don't really hear about the smaller towns once you come into Canada. You have to find them. Right?
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. Let's talk about that a little bit because you live in Ottawa now, as do I, and Ottawa is sort of, it's a big city, we're a million people.
Let me tell you, it was a culture shock.
Yeah, okay,
oh
tell
my
me
gosh.
About that, because, like, it feels pretty bilingual to me, because I'm an Anglophone, so when I came here to go to school, I was like, wow, there are really shopkeepers and, like, you know, grocery people that speak completely in French, and so that was felt new. But what was it like for you coming from, like, a French community but smaller place?
Well, it was hearing the different accents and the different words. When you're in the same community all your life, you hear the same things, right? Yeah. Being in the bigger city in Ottawa, holy, it's it was different because now I'm speaking to people who speak Belgian French and
yeah,
like African French or, you know.
Yeah.
So the accents, the vocabulary, I had to learn and quickly. It was really cool.
Well, that's something I wanted to ask as a non-Canadian. How is the accent different? So if you're Franco-Ontarian, whether in the other pockets outside of Quebec, what is your accent? Is it the very much Quebecois or is it more like the French or, oh no, how would you explain it?
No, it would be like a mix of Quebec and English.
Okay.
The Quebecers think that I'm Anglophone and Anglophones think I'm Quebecer. So it's like right in the middle. I don't have a very strong accent when I speak English and I don't have a very strong accent when I speak French.
Interesting. Okay. So even within Canada, the French accent changes dramatically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that accents, for example, my old supervisor was she was from Gatineau, which is the other side of the river from Ottawa, and even that to me is a specific kind of difference from Montreal, for example.
Yep.
And so if you hear someone from Montreal, they sound different than someone from Gatineau, and someone from Gatineau sounds different from someone from Chapeau, I'm sure.
Exactly. And even if you're talking about someone from Gatineau or Montreal and you compare it to someone in rural Quebec, completely different because different vocabulary, different older expressions. So it's really different. And it's like there's a much stronger accent the further in you go.
What do you mean by further in? For people that don't know Canadian geography.
Like,
a lot of our listeners are not from Canada.
Down the back roads, right?
Okay.
Just away from the city, right?
Yeah.
Because Chapeau is far from a big city.
Oh, yeah. It's 4 hours away from the nearest big city, yeah.
That's far, right? Like,
that is far, yeah.
We're getting into the bush. It's far.
Okay, here's another Canadian question. When Celine Dion speaks, does she have a super strong accent? In French, to clarify. Because in English, I think it's so funny. Because in English, there's a few words where I'm like, yeah, she's Canadian. Like, she doesn't sound American. And then when she sings, you don't really hear it except for a few things. But then the French people love her. Because they're like, she has no accent when she sings. But the moment she starts speaking, they freak out. Because she has such a strong accent for them. Do you guys find that to be true?
See, there's a big difference between Quebec and France, right? To me, she doesn't have an accent.
But she's from, like, the small town Quebec, right? Like, she's from rural Quebec.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, because I have family in rural Quebec and things like that, to me, she doesn't have an accent.
Okay.
Yes, I would imagine she has a stronger accent than some would expect. But a lot of times when you're singing, lot of people lose the accent for some reason.
I know. It's so impressive. I'm jealous. I wish I could make my voice not have an accent. I don't quite know how they tap into it, but it's nice.
But even sometimes I think when I listen to British singers, sometimes when they're singing, they don't always sound as British. Like, no. You don't always pick up on it as much.
To me, it's the words. It's the vocabulary choice that would distinguish a British person from an American. And even a few things with Celine Dion's songs in English. I think it's also her sounds, because to me, she makes sounds when she's singing in English that to me are French. Like, there's just a little bit at the end that I'm like, oh. And, like, I associate that with Canada over an American, because you're not going to find that in a pure American singer, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to have that flair. She's great. I love her, so sorry to fangirl.
I love Celine Dion as well. Like, yeah, but I think that one of the things that we were talking about that's very true with what you're saying is, like, vocabulary is the thing that sometimes is the most obvious. Accent, for sure. But, like, I even find, we speak French together sometimes, and I find the thing that is hardest for me is not your accent, but it's your vocabulary.
Sometimes I say stuff and you have never heard of a certain word, like...
Yes, that happened recently.
Can you give the example in French?
What it was is someone had, you said, des bas.
Oui.
And I said,
on porte des bas.
What is des bas? Like, what, and you said, you know, like, what you put on before you put on shoes. You put
yeah,
on...
your socks.
I mean, chaussettes.
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing is, it's because it's below you, right? It's on the bottom. You're putting on the bottoms.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So it just makes sense, but it's just so funny. Like, I had genuinely never heard that word before in my life. Like, ever.
That's so cool, though.
Yeah.
Or soulier. You had never heard of soulier.
I had never heard of soulier, which is what?
A shoe.
I didn't know that.
Do you have any favorite, like, words that you know are franco-ontarien, that are vocabulary that you're aware that maybe someone from Montreal or someone from France wouldn't know?
No, not really. we tend to just use common words and then make expressions out of them. Like, au coton.
Oh, explain that.
Right, so, well, to my knowledge, the coton would be like the middle of something. So, like, le coton of a lettuce, or, you know, like the heart.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what my family says, so I don't know. But, so a lot of people that I know would say, like, je suis excité au coton. I'm excited, like, completely. I'm really excited,
like,
right?
Straight to the core.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
So, au coton, straight to the core.
Interesting.
Right? I find that so interesting. Okay, but what we were saying about how you are one of the most bilingual people I know, do you ever have moments where you forget words in either language?
I do. I forget words in English all the time. It's embarrassing.
So often.
And obviously in French as well, but I find it worse when I'm like, what is that word?
It's your own
and
language.
Someone has to give me the... Yeah, when it's my own language. It's so awful.
So does that ever happen to you? Because, again, like, I just marvel at your ability to go between the languages so easily.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
All the time. My boyfriend finds it hilarious because he's Anglophone.
Oh, really?
So sometimes I'll be like, get me the couteau. So, like, give me the knife. And he's like, come again. So, it's really funny.
Yeah. I find that there are many times where we will switch to French also based on the type of conversation we're having.
Yes.
But,
that happens to us so often.
That happens to us all the time because I had a friend in France who found that, like, the grammar and structure of English she really liked for different types of conversations, but she said, with your boyfriend, you say, you are being stupid in English, but in French, there isn't really a way to say that. You have to say, like, t'es stupid, or t'étais stupid. You are stupid, you were stupid, but there's no, right now, just in this moment, you're being stupid. And so she liked that a lot.
I had a friend who grew up speaking Russian in her home. So, like, if she gets upset, she finds it so much easier to communicate in Russian, to be angry in Russian, than to be angry in English. Because she always said, like, it was the way the words came out, or their meaning, they were more powerful in Russian than English. Which I thought that was interesting, too. It's like a word can hold a power, or just this, like you were saying, the subtle difference of you are and you are being. There's not, it's the same verb, but it's the subtleness of how we've phrased it.
I think sometimes we just start speaking French so that my partner won't understand what we're talking about.
A lot of times, yeah.
I don't know. I find that sometimes French is, like, when I want to be more philosophical, I want to speak a little bit more in French.
The Simone de Beauvoir comes out. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Sometimes French has this poetic nature to it that English doesn't as much.
So you're going Molière?
Yeah, maybe a little Molière. Like, but I find that I switch a little bit.
So is that how you feel? Like, when you switch, do you even find yourself looking for friends based on language? do you gravitate more towards French speakers or more towards English speakers? Does it not matter at all?
It doesn't really matter to me. If somebody comes up saying bonjour, I'll respond bonjour, and then we'll just strike up a conversation that way. Same with English. Friendships? That just comes with time, like usual. But, yeah.
Okay, yeah. But I have a hard-hitting question. I think that maybe it matters to people who are very francophone. If you speak French, there is sort of this, hey, I got you, you know? Because I remember that you had a supervisor many years ago who didn't know you spoke French, and when you said you were getting flustered and you said bella or something like French, he went, a bet? And he didn't know that you spoke French, and it didn't change the way he thought of you, but it did kind of change that moment.
Yeah, it kind of changed the dynamic because he was more comfortable in French. Mm-hmm. So if he didn't know how to express himself in a certain moment, he'd turn to me.
Yeah.
Where we work, there's a lot of French-speaking people from mm-hmm. other countries. A lot of them gravitate to me because on the shift, I'm the only one who speaks French.
Yeah.
So
it is, in a way, very useful to make friends because that you're more open, or at least people are more willing to talk to you because of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or they need you, I guess is another way to say it.
Exactly. Yeah, you can make connections that way, but
yeah.
Other than that...
Yeah. No, I mean...
To me, it's pretty easy because, again, bilingual, right?
Yeah.
It's not really a thought.
Mm.
It's more of a habit. It just happens.
Right.
So, yeah, it's really easy for me.
I want to know what it's like when you're thinking. Do you automatically think in French? It's so hard to describe it. Like, even with myself, like, there's sometimes that I'm thinking in French, speaking in French, and then I switch back. But I still feel it in my head the moment I switch. Like, do you have that? Or is it just, it just flows?
In moments, I do have that, depending on how long I spoke to French people or how long I spoke to English people in that day or that moment. So the longer I speak a language, the harder it will be to switch.
Mm. Right? I totally get that.
It's because you've made it a habit, right? Mm. So your brain is getting used to it, right? And... once you're, it's like you jumped across the line, mm-hmm. and then you have to jump back. You're not straddling it anymore.
Yeah. Because I definitely remember, as I learned, there was a point where I stopped translating in my head. Because, like, as a baby, beginner, French learner, you have to translate everything, and you're thinking how to construct a sentence. And then one day, I don't even know when or how, just one day it stopped. Like, I stopped translating in my head, I just understood. And so that was a big moment, but, like, as a native speaker of both French and English, you never had that because it was just automatic as a child. Like, it was just always there. Like, ugh, I'm just so jealous. I wish my brain was that big.
For me, I think I might have had a moment, but it was in childhood, right? I don't remember.
Yeah.
I just picked it up really quick.
I guess because your school was in French, though. Home and school. So that's really helpful in terms of French learning, but I guess English, it would have been the opposite. You would have had to have a moment one day where you just understood the television, right? Because no one was giving you English at home or at school.
Well, the thing is, you learn your native language by listening to your parents
mm.
or your environment, yeah. right? You learn another language by listening,
mm.
right? And then associating the words to what's happening, right? That's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
Right? If you hear it enough, you'll associate it to the meaning. So,
and your mom was also really, you remember, you told me that your mom was very good about, like, not making you sound too French when you spoke English.
Exactly.
She was like, don't have an accent when you speak English.
No, it wasn't really like that. It was more like, that's not how you say it, hun.
Yeah.
Like, that's, no. It's not brother. It's brother.
Yeah.
Use your tongue, brother. Like,
okay.
It was things like that. Because she was fully bilingual. She is fully bilingual, sorry. And she was raised the same way.
Mm-hmm.
French parents, okay. And then English environment.
So is your family always been from that same small town?
No, my mom actually went to Chapleau from Sudbury, which is a slightly bigger town, 4 hours away. So she came to Chapleau for teaching. She was only supposed to be there for 2 years. It was to do her her training. And she met my dad, and it was not 2 years anymore.
No, we can't understand that story.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Okay, but your dad is from there?
Yeah, well? My dad is from Chapleau. Oh, my dad has this expression, you learn French, but you catch English. Meaning like a disease. Like, le français s'apprend. So you learn French, et l'anglais s'attrape.
Yeah.
So you catch English like a disease.
But we've had this conversation so many times, and I think it's partly because, you know, again, a misunderstanding about Canada is that Quebec is the only place that speaks French. Another misunderstanding about Canada is that everybody is bilingual, right?
Of course not. Oh my gosh.
And of course not. And so we've talked about this where even if we speak French, a lot of the time if there is one English person in the room, we speak English. We were talking about this just a couple days ago.
Yeah, it happens so often. I don't know if it's a cultural thing, but if you have a group of French people talking and having a good time, and then there's like one or two English, and they don't understand French, right? The French will try and like, or the French people in this situation in Canada,
yeah.
They gesticulate, they try their hardest to get understood, and they even try to speak English. Those who are capable of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, I haven't seen the reverse.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think that we can sort of be honest about that and say, I think that's true. Like, I don't, my team at work of four people, I am bilingual. My manager is bilingual, but from Montreal and a francophone. One of my colleagues is francophone, but bilingual. And the other one is I think, anglophone. And we speak in English all day long. And it is sort of a weird thing where English is almost like that's that sort of l'anglais s'attrape, right? Like where it just takes over.
Yeah.
It kind of just takes over, even when French is a viable alternative, which is interesting. And then what is a viable alternative, right? Like, I mean, if you're in France, shouldn't you be speaking French? If you're in a French environment, why do you need to all turn to English?
But the thing is, like, English is such a part of the world.
Mm.
Like, it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's a majority everywhere, but it is everywhere. So
yeah.
There's many people who speak English, and then there's these pockets of French people, right? We assume that they can't speak French and just speak English.
Yeah. And you're probably right most of the time. I mean, unfortunately, Canada is,
like it's happened to you with, like...
Oh, yeah.
Trying to speak French, and they assume that speaking English would be easier for you when you just want to keep speaking French.
Yeah, no, it has.
That was my experience the one time I've been in Canada. I went to Montreal, and I was so excited. I was like, oh, I speak French. I'm going to practice. This is going to be great. And every time, I would... You know, I'd be like, je voudrais un sandwich, blah, blah, blah. And then they would respond, okay, and what would you like to drink? I was like, me no. And I remember I was so mad. And I was trying to buy these metro tickets. And I clearly explained exactly what I wanted, where I wanted to go. I was like, there's two youth, one adult. And I did it all in French. And she responded in English. And she's like, where do you want to go? And I was like, I've given you all the information. And I fought it, and I just stayed in French, and I broke her. She eventually, it took about 3 minutes. She kept responding, and I kept going. I was like, I'm going to do it. Like, I am not speaking in English with you, ma'am.
That's actually the smartest thing to do. They, like, you gain respect and understanding, right? It clicks after a while. Like, oh, she actually wants to speak French, right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm in the wrong. Yeah, like.
Yeah, No, I think you're right, and I think that that is so not the only anecdote about that from Montreal that I've heard. Like, everybody I know who has tried to speak French in Montreal, but also in Ottawa, but, like, definitely in Montreal has said that you try, and then they just respond in English.
Yeah, and I won't say I'm not guilty of it either.
Is that different in Quebec City?
I wouldn't think so.
Depending on where you are.
Yeah.
Some people see Anglophones differently. like encroaching on our territory kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So they'll try to speak French, or they'll speak French behind your back. Mm-hmm. Things like that. But
that's where that vocabulary comes in, I think. Yeah. Because...
But the thing is, they will speak English to you, but it will be different.
Mm. That's interesting. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, it's so interesting. Okay. We're getting to be in the holiday spirit. So I was wondering if you could talk to us about your experience as a, like, how your francophonie impacts on your holiday traditions. Because I know last year we attempted to make a tortilla.
It kind of worked.
But it was a beautiful story, and you should tell it, and you should tell us how the sort of Frenchness of your life impacts on holidays.
Okay, well, so, like you said, we made tourtière.
Yeah, and which, for people who don't know...
Tourtière is a French-Canadian meat pie.
I was so jealous when I saw the photos. Very jealous.
So, you can have anything in it. Like, it's usually beef and pork mixed together. Mm-hmm. But you can have mousse and pork and other things. It was mostly a, put all the meat you have in the pie kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So good.
Oh, it's delicious. It was perfect for, you know, when you didn't have many things to put in a pie, or you didn't have anything fancy, mm-hmm. you had a meat pie.
Yeah, because it's basically just onions, oil, meat, and clove, and maybe a little bit of cinnamon and salt. That's, like,
yep.
it.
Sometimes potatoes.
Yeah, sometimes potatoes. Yeah. But it's such a basic pie. But yeah. Do you do the thing where you, like, what do you do for presents? Because I've heard that French Canadians open their presents on Christmas Eve at midnight. They open all of them on Christmas Eve at midnight. How do you celebrate Christmas?
I don't really have that. We used to have, like, open one package, one present at midnight, mm-hmm. and then the rest on Christmas Day.
That's nice.
And it depends on where you are, what traditions you live around, right? Mm-hmm. My parents preferred, like, New Year's. Mm. Like, we had, like, shrimp rings and, like, just a bunch of different things that we didn't usually have.
Yeah, that was, like, the fancy occasion.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not French-Canadian, but my mom would get, a pre-made tourtière or something like that sometimes, because it's delicious. I mean...
They're still really good. Oh,
they're so good, right?
Homemade's better, though.
Homemade is better. We made a tortilla based on a handwritten recipe from Brigitte's grandmother. Was
my,
it?
No, my aunt.
Your aunt. My Sorry, aunt. Your aunt.
Yeah.
Didn't she make more than one? Wasn't the recipe for many
the
pies?
The recipe was for six pies, and I think we made three.
Yeah.
But I love that there's, like, nope, gotta make 6 pounds of meat.
Yeah.
It was great. It was really
It was
fun.
Like 3 pounds of pork, 3 pounds of this.
Yeah.
And, add the onions.
And she had a recipe as well for ragu.
Yeah.
With des boulettes. Like,
wait.
Meatballs, basically.
Ragu de pâte de cochon.
Pâte de cochon, right. Yes. Like pig's foot.
Yeah. Or pork hock or whatever.
Well, yeah.
I'm not sure which one it is.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
It's... my aunt, she usually made the meat into meatballs, mm-hmm. and then put them in the stew. But usually it's just you boil down your pork hog, mm-hmm. until you can, like, take it off the bone. You shred it, mm-hmm. and you have boiled potatoes and everything and all that. You added, what is it, browned flour.
Oh, yes, yeah.
To make that brown sauce. Yeah. And then you add the meat to it. And then you add whatever spices you want or need or whatever. It was very easy and cheap.
Yes. Yeah. And a lot of good food comes from, like, this is cheap, but it's delicious and, like, you know, it's that. Yeah.
All the best food doesn't really cost much.
I mean, historically, yeah. Because it's the same with, like, in France with the beef bourguignon. That was a peasant dish because you have to cook the jaw of the cow. That was all that was left. It was tough, hard meat, and they would just stew it for hours. Now everyone's like, I would like it. It's a delicacy. And you're like, this is peasant food. This is literally...
No, it's so true.
But it's true. But, like, they're... And same with, like, tartiflette. It's potatoes and, like, lardon and cheese. And you're like, what do you think the farmers had in the winter? Like, this is it. And it's so good. And this is now what I eat every winter because it's delicious.
It's so good. I think that's the other cool thing is that, like, the climate sometimes also affects, like, the food. I mean, now we're getting down a rabbit hole of food because we could talk about it forever. But, like, Chapleau is, we should say, like, Sudbury is north of Chapleau, but it's also north of Toronto. So, like, it's in, I wouldn't say northern Ontario, but it is more northern than most people live.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, like, Toronto's in the tail end of Canada, so...
Okay, but yeah, Toronto is a wonderful...
It's basically the U.S., isn't it? I mean...
It's not basically
like,
the U.S.
Like, it's literally in the tail.
No, okay, listen. Whatever. 5 million people live there. It's anyway.
We got some Canadian action going on. This is great.
But the truth is that...
You don't know snow until you go higher.
I will say, I didn't really truly know winter until I moved to Ottawa. And
which is
kind
of sad because...
And I'm sure that Ottawa is way more, like, mild compared to where you grew up.
You used to have 40 centimeters in, like, one storm.
Yeah, that's insane.
Like...
more than a ruler full, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's like, yeah, 12, 13 inches. Yeah. And then the next night, we'd have, like, half a ruler.
Yeah, that's a lot. So.
Thank you for joining us for our last episode of 2021. It was such a special treat to have this opportunity to speak with Brigitte about what it means to be Franco-Ontarienne and grow up in a bilingual family. I had a blast getting to talk about Canada and learn more as an outsider. And I'm sure, Miranda, you had a great time talking about your own country. But before we wrap up, I thought it would be fun to revisit all of the different books we've read this year. What was your favorite book in 2021 that dealt with the Francophonie?
I would say that my favorite book from 2021 is definitely a tie between The Second Sex, which I just adored, and one of our most recent ones, Banana Girl. I thought that was one of the most interesting and unique books I've read in a long time. Both definitely must-reads, both incredibly different.
I think I'm cheating a little bit because my answer isn't that different from our retrospective episode. Nothing has topped Ali Sinatra's The Art of Losing. I have to say it remains my favorite, but I am really happy that we dove into some of the classics that we set out to at the beginning. For instance, Simone de Beauvoir's Second Sex was the first book of the year for me, and I am so happy to have finally read such a classic and to have been able to discuss it with you. So that's my two recommendations, and can't wait for the new year with new books and new stories. Bonne année, tout le monde! À bientôt!
Happy New Year! See you guys next year!